Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And as you know, I always bring in the best guests, and I'm bringing in the number one guest today, and that is my man, Xander Horowitz, my son. What's up, my brother?
Not much. How's it going today, Dad?
It's going great, and congratulations. You made it out of college, and you gave your old man a little bit of a raise now, so I don't have to pay for that education anymore, and you're going to go out and earn a living, and tell us what you're going to do, big boy.
Yeah, so I was in between a couple places, and basically I wanted to get involved in the financial services industry. Because obviously, you know, I've been involved with the market for a long time. Basically, stuff I started learning from you when early in high school. And I also like working with people, you know, been a part of many sports teams and, you know, in many teams in general. You know, I really like the challenge of, you know, having a goal and working towards it. So I thought something in financial services would be pretty suitable to what I wanted to do. So I ended up picking Edward Jones as the place I'm going to work at as a financial advisor. So I start in a couple months, and you know I'm very excited about the job. I know that it's tough. It's not easy. It's not for everybody, but definitely a challenge I'm looking forward to. You know, obviously, first you have to pass your licensing tests and, you know, kind of get acclimated with the industry and go through a training program, and then you're basically off on your own. I think the really cool thing about Edward Jones is that, you know, you get an office and just an assistant, and that's basically it. It's just you. Working in the office by yourself, you know, making clients, acquiring your book, however you see fit. And I think that's the really cool part. The really cool part about it, it's not necessarily a 9-to-5 job. It's whatever you want to make of it. So if you do a good job, you'll be very successful. And if you don't, then you'll be looking for other work.
Then you'll be looking for a job, right? You'll be returning Coke bottles. So you're going to be in the advisory business. And of course, there's a lot of tests that you have to take. And of course, you kind of prepped for it with your, you did a double major at school where you were business and economics. And tell us how school finished out and what's your thought of the overall education?
You know, I thought the education was good. I almost found as much value, though, as kind of living on my own and, you know, kind of bridging that step between childhood and adulthood was almost just as valuable as what I learned in the classroom. I think I learned a lot of great stuff, but, you know, it seems like when you get into a job, you get into a field, a lot of the stuff you learn in the classroom is helpful, but it's not necessarily the end-all, be-all of what you need to do a good job in whatever field you're in. I mean, textbooks are great for teaching. They're great for learning. But, you know, even a lot of my friends I've talked to who are a year or two older than me have said, you know, a lot of it has been on the fly. A lot of it has been through training. And so, like I said, I found the most benefit for myself kind of living on my own, you know, making sure I had, you know, X and Y taken care of. You know, it wasn't like high school anymore where I was getting dragged out of bed by my mom all the time. So I thought that was really valuable, and kind of, you know, parlaying that with, you know, going to class, figuring out what you wanted to study, how you wanted to go about it. And, you know, I think some of the stuff will definitely translate. You know, I first came in as an economics major. I took a class in high school that I really enjoyed, just kind of learning about, you know, how the world works and kind of more of the why. I thought for business, for me, it was kind of the what is going on, what's happening. But economics, to me at first, you know, explained the why, which I thought was a little more interesting. You know, supply and demand, I think, is the basic premise of economics at every level that you want to look at. And I always found that very interesting, whether it came to markets, whether it came to currency, whether it came to goods. Basically anything you can think of comes down to, you know, two people finding an equilibrium and making a decision. So, you know, after the first couple of years, I was a little bit ahead in my coursework. So I figured, you know, I might as well not waste your money and time and probably pick up another major. So I decided to go with business as well, and to, you know, took some interesting business classes, you know, human resources, organization management, kind of learning from people that had been involved with the field. You know, had some very good professors. I was very lucky. You know, I think I only had a couple bad ones, but that'll happen at any school you go to. But yeah, you know, I really enjoyed my senior year. It was a great time, and it's definitely bittersweet to graduate. You know, I remember walking out of my fraternity house with all my friends the last night. Was very tough, probably the toughest part in the next couple of weeks leading up to graduation. Kind of came to the realization that it was all over. But you know, I had a great time, and you know, don't regret anything. Don't regret going there. It was awesome. Made a lot of good friends. But you know, like anything in life, sometimes you got to move on. And I think come to that realization that that's what's going to happen come July 24th when I start working for Edward Jones. But I'm definitely looking forward to the opportunity.
You're working for Bubba and Company right now until July 24th, so you got some things to do. But I understand that. And so, you know, you talk about price discovery, which is what you're alluding to before, and the value. Now, from your standpoint, do you guys learn about true price discovery? Like, I say that right now, markets don't really have true price discovery. It's more of a manipulated price discovery, and it's more of a controlled environment. Do you agree, disagree, or not really sure?
I would tend to agree with you. I don't think we really learned. You know, I actually didn't take the investments class at school. I kind of ran out of time at the end. I needed a couple other classes to complete my business, like, administration major. So I never really got into what they were learning. But, you know, I talked with a few friends who took the class. And, yeah, I don't think price discovery is a concept that is really taught or understood by a lot of people. I mean, supply and demand is, I think, an easy way to think about something, but or easy way to think about the market. But it's not, you know, the right thing per se. It's just kind of a simplified version that really isn't true, you know, if you know what I mean.
Right. No, I got you. I mean, it's again, it's very much, you know, like, for example, right now we're being, you know, the interest rates are being manipulated, which changes the value. So it really makes the price different. And so you don't have a real true model where, you know, it's actually based on price. It's more based on currency value, which is why a lot of the companies have trouble sometimes, you know, making earnings. At least they say that, because, of course, the dollar fluctuates because of the currency we use. So when you look around, all right, now you got a job pretty easily, and you did it all on your own.
It wasn't very easy, but
The interview process might have been challenging, but you basically had two major interviews, and you basically could have had either job, I think, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, what was that like? I mean, obviously, the interviewing process, you know, when you're going into the securities field is a little bit tougher than anywhere else, because, of course, you're going to have to be licensed and you've got a lot of things to do. What do you think?
Yeah. So the interview process for me was really interesting, because I had definitely fallen a little bit behind on looking for a job and just being ready in general for the next step. I think in my junior year, as well as a lot of my friends did, we were having a great time, but we weren't necessarily putting forth the adequate effort to be ready to look for a job and to interview. We have a great career center at Illinois Wesleyan.
You know, hold that thought, because we'll pick it up on the other side of the break. But you were El Presidente when you were a junior, so you were having a good time controlling the house and making sure everything was going on correctly, and of course, enjoying yourself as well, because I believe that during your junior year you also turned 21, which is obviously always a benefit when you're in a university environment. But we're with Xander Horowitz, now advisor or on his way to training at Edward Jones, and of course this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, and we want to make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day, as well as The Sporting Edge, if you've noticed, is now being hosted by Xander and Roz, and of course check that show out, and don't forget, of course, of Bubba's Bottom Line, which is available at BubbaTrading.com. We shoot that live once a week for you and load up the recording. And I think I give you a lot of good information. And plus, there's a lot of good things at the website that you can actually help you invest or farm or do whatever things you're going to do. It will help you do it better. And we try to give a lot of information to help you with more financial literacy. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with Xander after the break.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my main man, Xander Horowitz, now of Edward Jones. And so, Xander, you were telling us about your late charge for a job. So go ahead and take us through that story.
Yeah, so like I was saying, we got a great career center at our school, you know, very helpful, you know, resume-wise, interview-wise, you know, looking for a job. But that all comes with putting forth the effort to actually trying to get one. So, you know, like I said, myself and most of my friends were very behind on the process. And, you know, I decided not to go with a practice interview before my first interview. And it was an interesting story. So, you know, I always felt, you know, obviously I know nothing about really working in the real world or doing a job or interviewing with anybody because I hadn't had a real interview up to that point. But my thought process was, you know, I didn't want to be I didn't want to just tell the interview or whoever I was talking to. I didn't just want to tell them, you know, what they wanted to hear, like out of a textbook. So I think I could have benefited definitely from a couple practice interviews. But my thought process was that, you know, I didn't want to kind of, you know, code myself to come up with these answers that would, you know, maybe sound good, but really wouldn't be who I am. And, you know, that's what I really found out that it was helpful. I think, you know, my first couple interviews were a little more genuine because I hadn't put myself in a position to, you know, kind of think about what I was going to say. So it kind of just came out. You know, obviously would have liked to have been a little more prepared. But, you know, overall, I really don't regret the decision to not, you know, do 1,000 practice interviews. Like I know a lot of the kids at my school did because, you know, my thought process was that, you know, I'm going to work for this company. And if they don't like who I am or, you know, they don't see the value that I could bring to them, then, you know, we probably just shouldn't work together in the first place. I didn't want to be somebody who was fake, you know, and kind of reading off of a mental textbook to, you know, impress the person I was talking to, because if I was going to do that and, you know, kind of change who I was, then I thought it wouldn't really be beneficial. So I remember my first interview with Edward Jones, you know, they actually had a recruiter come to the campus. It was a really nice guy who had graduated about 6 years before. Had a great conversation with him. And then little did I know that this process with Edward Jones would take about 3 months and really test, you know, like my mental fortitude, because I remember I thought when I got on the phone for a second interview with this other woman that, you know, that would be it. I thought it was a great interview. I thought it went well, and I thought I was going to get offered a job on the spot. But I still had another 2 months to go. You know, I had to visit a rep in my hometown. You know, I had to complete an enormous background check that took me about 4 hours to complete. And then the final thing I had to do was, you know, kind of a day in the life simulation of a financial advisor. So it took a really, really long time. But I think that kind of reflects what the company was looking for. I mean, they're a company who, you know, is really selective on who they hire. So I think they intentionally draw out their interview process because, you know, they want people who are committed to the process and, you know, don't just want that immediate feedback. So that was something that was really tough for me because, you know, with senior year coming to an end, you know, I had finals coming up, had a lot of big papers I had to complete and still had that weight on my shoulders of not knowing what I was going to do after school, which, you know, about half of my friends at that point knew what they were doing. Half of them didn't. And, you know, the half who didn't, you could just see it. It was kind of a weight walking around. We all wanted to have a great last few weeks, but it got kind of tough near the end. So when I got that call the final week before graduation, it was a really awesome moment. We, you know, wasn't doing anything, had completed all the work, was just waiting for that Sunday. So it was awesome and, you know, definitely looking forward to it.
So now you go into, you know, the real world of understanding and learning about securities and all the rules and regulations that go along with it. And, of course, it's a job that, you know, not only do you have to know the regulations, but you have to understand what's going on in markets. And you also have to understand, you know, what people are trying to do and what they're trying to accomplish. So what are some of the steps you're taking to yourself to kind of get prepared?
Well, you know, the first thing I kind of just like to keep up generally with the news. You know, I'm not a news junkie. You know, I'm not sitting in front of the TV, you know, 4 hours a day watching what's going on. But, you know, I like to tap into, you know, Wall Street Journal, you know, Yahoo, you know, a couple times a day, maybe see what's going on. And also, I think one of the biggest things that keeps me updated is writing for the Bubba Report. Just like a little general recap of the S&P for the month. Very simple, you know. I'd call it technical analysis, but you know, it's just a bunch of levels bouncing back and forth, and I think that's really helped me, you know, kind of keep in tune with the market and the economy, because you know they more or less go, you know, they go together, you know, in the news, market's doing good, and they also they don't go together, you know, the market can be going up like it has been, the economy can be doing bad, but they always have some sort of relation. News-wise, that I think it's good to keep up to date with. So I think, you know, writing for the Bubba Report, I think it's been about a year, I think, you know, looking at the chart, identifying levels in the S&P has really kind of kept me in the loop, which is basically what I wanted to do. You know, I'm not, you know, like I said, I was in college. I was about to graduate. I was having a great time. I wasn't, you know, sitting in front of my computer all day reading and keeping up with the economy, but definitely something that kept me in. And yeah, I would say looking at, you know, basically the Dow, the S&P every couple of days, I like doing that the most.
Well, you also were actually teaching your fraternity brothers. How did that work out?
You know, I got a little lazy at the end. It didn't work out quite as well as it started, but you know, I think I gave the guys a pretty good few lessons in just markets in general. And this was, you know, part of the high school course that we did together. And I came up with the idea a little bit before winter break started. I think it was about a month. And, you know, I really wanted to learn the material better. You know, I know I had wrote some of it and gone through it, but I think you truly master something when you're able to teach it to someone. Cause I remember sitting in math class in high school, you know, hundreds of times, teacher writes something on the board, it makes a ton of sense. And then the test gets put in front of me and I just, you know, I basically shit myself and I can't reproduce what I saw on the board. So I really wanted to get to that next step of, you know, not only knowing and being able to nod my head and retain it, but being able to teach it to someone, because, you know, when you teach somebody who doesn't know as much as you do, and then they have to ask you questions, I mean, that's the true test, I think. And that's where you really build your knowledge. So I got a double benefit out of it. I was doing it for myself, but I also wanted to kind of share what I knew, or what I know now, which I know is not, you know, it's not very much, but it's enough that I think it's important for people to kind of just have a general idea of what's going on. So I probably, guys were coming in and out, but probably 8 or 9 guys pretty regularly. And obviously we started with markets in general, you know, what is a market? What is the stock market? You know, went into stocks, you know, went into basic concept of stocks, like, you know, what is liquidity? What is price discovery? You know, what is, you know, risk versus reward? All these little things. And we kind of broke down, you know, some charts, phases of the market, just little things that, you know, I think are pretty important. Obviously, I think they're important because I learned them at a younger age. But, you know, I think I saw, you know, in some of my fraternity brothers, they just got super interested in it because it is a very interesting business and an interesting model when you learn a little bit about it. I mean, I know if you don't know anything about it and you took a look at it, it'd be super confusing. You wouldn't know what was going on. But, you know, with the little bit of information I was able to give to these guys, you know, their interest level, I think, peaked almost exponentially. And it was really cool to see because, you know, they were always asking me questions and I was happy to answer them. I didn't always have, like, you know, the best answer or the right answer, but I explained it as best to them as I knew how. So overall, you know, obviously I should have worked a little harder at the end, but I think I gave them all a few good lessons that they can take forward with them.
Well, I think you gave them a tool that they didn't have before, and I think it's a learning experience that you really can't replace. And it's really when you're able to teach it, it means that you have enough of an understanding of how the actual markets work, because when you really think about it, everything is the same. I mean, we look at it, you know, as an investing standpoint from here, but when you go to buy a car, you're creating a market. When you go to the grocery store, you're shopping price, and you may not buy at this store because you can get a better price there. You go to a flea market. So if you relate it down to the simplest basis, which is everything that we do, that we buy, is something to do with the market. We have the decision whether or not we want to buy something or not buy something based on price. And I think that is something that we'll talk more about, that price discovery, because I think it's important. You know, when we come back from the break, we're with the one and only Xander Horowitz, freshly graduated, Nice to see him do that, and is going to be at the Gainfully Employed very soon. So that's going to be a good thing. But make sure that you listen to him on the Sporting Edge every weekend. You can download a show at libertytalk.fm, and you can also get the Bubba Show every single day at the libertytalk.fm. And I encourage you to check it out, and also BubbaTrading.com. That's where we do Bubba's Bottom Line, as well as have some of the products that we offer and some of the free webinars that we do as well. We're going to step out here for a break. We'll be right back with more from Xander Horowitz after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz coming right back. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. Bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Xander Horowitz, my son, and of course, freshly graduated, now employed. Edward Jones, going to be an advisor, staying in the business. And you taught it a little bit. So what did you think of my examples of real price discovery? I mean, if you go to Amazon, you want to buy something. If it's not the price you want to pay, then you guys didn't discover price. You didn't exchange money for goods, right? I mean, it's the same or where you go, is it not?
Yeah. In every transaction, you need a seller and a buyer, and if you don't have both of those, then there is no transaction, there is no market. So I think, the supply and demand thing, I think a big fallacy behind it is, even if you have more buyers than sellers, it doesn't mean the price is going to go up, because, even if you have more buyers, if you don't have the rest of the people, if you don't have the rest of the sellers, then it doesn't really mean anything. So it's more, I think the aggressiveness that makes kind of the discovery of price, not necessarily the amount on either side.
Right. So again, and that's what you look for. And of course, like I said, even grocery shopping is price discovery. I mean, people will drive all over. They'll spend $5 in gas because they have a dollar, but they'll get that price discovery. Right. And so when you look at the function of the markets, you've gone through a lot of these classes, and you basically have lived, through probably the biggest rally of all time. It's been, basically the markets have gone straight up, and there's been a lot of Fed intervention and things like that. But at the end of the day, the market's still going up. And of course, 401ks are going up. But they talk a lot about the millennials and that they don't have a lot of faith in the system. And you're from that, that's your group. Now, what's your take on the system? Do you have faith in the system? Are you concerned? What are some of the things you think about?
What do you mean by the system? That's, I guess.
Well, in other words, like the millennials aren't necessarily interested in buying housing right now because they're afraid that the system's going to, the markets are going to collapse again in the housing market. They're afraid. They have a lot of fear about investing because of what's happened in the past. And, of course, it's happened before. It happened to every generation in history so far. So why would this time be different? But for some reason, either because of the electronic age or whatever, there's much more that are not really interested in moving out into their own places, purchasing real estate or doing some of that type of investing. They're more interested in not doing that. And I'm just wondering if you've heard that, or if you've seen that, or what's your thoughts?
I haven't really seen it or heard it, but I mean, I wouldn't disagree with you that it's a thing. When you talk about like buying housing or whatever part of the economy cycles and has been cycling, since it, became the economy. I mean, if you basically look at it, every 7 or 8 years, the business cycle kind of turned itself over. So, I kind of disagree. I do have faith in the system, and, not because I think it's the best. It's just because it's what it is. The stock market obviously won't go up every day, but you look at it from its inception, it basically goes up 9 or 10% a year. So when you talk about investing, long-term investing, you're not really worried about what's going on every second of every day, because if you did that, all your hair would fall out and you wouldn't be able to do anything else. So when you look at the market, it has been going up for a very long time. You know, obviously it's gone down a little bit too, but you know, basically since 2008, it's gone up at a pretty decent clip. And now I guess that was basically when I started getting introduced to the market. So I don't know if I've ever really seen a true back and forth. I mean, you know, with the Fed interest rates being near zero, I mean, they're a little higher now, but you know, this market has essentially gone straight up for almost a decade now. So it's kind of interesting because obviously it's not going to do that forever. You know, things in the economy will change along with interest rates and everything else. But, you know, back to your point about, you know, my generation kind of being skeptical. You know, I'm not a big fan of the skepticism because, you know, like I said, the economy, it fluctuates every decade. It's not, you know, always going to go up or always going to go down. It's just, it happens. It's called the business cycle. That's what happens. It cycles back and forth and you have good times and bad times. But I mean, the hope is that in the long run, you know, things will grow and get better. And I think that's basically what we've seen, you know, throughout the history of our economy.
And I don't disagree. Again, I think you have to, you can have disagreements, which obviously I don't agree with the Federal Reserve. I don't like what they've done. You know, I don't like the way that we do a lot of things. I don't like all the entitlements. But again, that is the system in which I live. And to this date, there is not much better anywhere else. And, you know, what I don't like, though, is I don't like to hear from people. That's the way we've always done it. I always get irritated by that. You know, it's like, you know, why wouldn't you vote for Trump? And I'm not saying you should vote for Trump, but I mean, just, well, he's not a politician. So we only vote for politicians. Well, why can't we step up? You know, it goes back to, you know, why is we do X? Well, that's the way we've always done it. And I think that's the wrong way to look at things. I think that's how we end up in a trap. Just like, for example, now, many of the media pundits and many of the people out there are trying to tell everybody that the markets are different this time and it's not going to have the same ending. And I go, well, okay, you know, we've only seen this, you know, every decade for 140 years. Why is this time going to be different? And that's, yeah, well, I don't get it.
Your point was great. I mean, the thing that people are afraid the most about is change. I mean, any aspect of life. I mean, human beings are creatures of habit. We like to do the same thing. So when somebody comes along and wants to change the way that you do something or offers a different way that you can do it, I mean, people are very skeptical of change in general. But, you know, I think if you look at almost any part of life, that's what makes innovation is people challenging the status quo. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the President Trump not being a politician. There's plenty of things that, you know, basically everything that gets innovated is somebody changing the way that we've always done something. So it usually takes a couple people to get it going against a lot of other people who are very skeptical. But, you know, people are very fearful of change. And I think that's why, you know, things stay the same most of the time, because, you know, you can't get a big group of people to change their way of thinking.
And I actually agree with that. I think that that's, you know, one of the issues that we live in today is that we settle too often for the status quo versus, you know, you look at a guy like, I mean, Elon Musk, he's in the news right now. Okay. He wants to now do underground roads to free up traffic. I mean, he's got all, listen, he's a very great innovator, Tesla, you know, he was PayPal, Tesla, SolarCity. You got a butt?
I said SpaceX, too.
SpaceX. So, I mean, here's a guy that's really innovative, and he stepped out of the box. And, of course, he's worth $1 billion now. And he, not only is that, but he was smart enough to get $1 billion from the government. So it's even smarter. But, I mean, what I'm saying is that, you know, that's how you see great innovations is by not following the path, right?
Right. I mean, that's exactly right. You know, basically every company he's invented has been just a complete change in the way that people do things. You know, Tesla, like you said, PayPal, the online credit card back and forth. I mean, that was something that nobody had ever seen before. But, you know, you have one guy with a vision who has not only the means, but the intelligence and the knowledge to do something and eventually show people that it's something that works really well. It's great. And, you know, you can see that PayPal is not like, it's not out of the, it's not an abnormal concept anymore. It's just like, you have a PayPal. Yes, I have a PayPal. Everybody has a PayPal. And you even look at Tesla when they first came out, you know, very different, kind of a higher end car. And now it's, you know, there's tons of people that have Teslas and all these ideas. I mean, he is, I would say in the world right now, Elon Musk is probably the biggest innovator. Just, you know, a brilliant guy. And, you know, you could think like, you know, what could he do from here? I mean, I know they've got a couple of things in the works, but he's a truly unbelievable guy. And he is the exact type of person I'm talking about with change. that needs to show people, and he has shown people with a lot of the businesses he's ran, and I think, you know, he also has a lot more to show.
Would you say that he's a bigger innovator than Jeff Bezos from Amazon? Because he's pretty talented as well.
You know what? If I was going to name the top two, it would definitely be both of them. I mean, Jeff Bezos, what he's doing with Amazon is unbelievable. They're kind of, you know, it seems like they're trying to engulf the entire online retail market for anything. And it's kind of cool because, you know, you have this one company that kind of started out as, you know, just goods, and they're expanding to food, and, you know, they've got, you know, the drones delivering to people. You know, I haven't heard an update on that lately, but that's something I heard. Just all these different things and trying to make Amazon basically like the end all be all of online commerce, which I don't know if that'll happen, but it might someday. I mean, I think retail is slowly kind of going out of style. I'm not a fan of it. I really like going out and buying my groceries, making a trip to the store, you know, going to buy a TV or going to buy clothes. I'm kind of an old soul in that sense, which is, you know, kind of against my generation, but, you know, pretty soon it seems like people are going to be shopping online, literally doing everything online. You know, you need a roll of toilet paper. You just ran out on the John. It's there in 5 minutes. I feel like that's kind of what the world's coming to, which I really don't like. I like making a trip out of things. But it's just so, it's easier. It saves time, and that, I feel like that's kind of where we've gone the past 10 or 15 years, is everything trying to cut down time, you know, faster technology, you know, faster back and forth to places. It's just everything's being cut down, and obviously doing things online from your home is a lot quicker. So I think Jeff Bezos kind of sees the opportunity to, you know, just gain more market share in the e-commerce industry. Which he's, I think, definitely doing.
I think he's done a hell of a job. But I think it's not only is it faster, it's cheaper because you don't have to pay for gas. It's more convenient, especially if you know what you're buying. So again, listen, I'm an online guy just because for the convenience, because I don't feel like going to the store. I mean, I go to the store once a year for Christmas time when I do my shopping. Other than that, I'm an online guy, and that's what I believe in. But we'll see, and we'll talk more about this and more when we come back from the break. We are with Xander Horowitz, my man, and of course, he just finished graduating and is ready to go out into the world. This is The Bubba Show. Make sure you check out The Sporting Edge every weekend with Xander as host with Roz. And of course, you get The Bubba Show every day at libertytalk.fm. Make sure you check out the station because we've got a lot of other good things going on. We're going to be running some new promotions, so make sure you go check that out. In the meantime, bubbatrading.com will get you the rest of the information you need about the trading and investing world. We'll step out here for a break. We'll be right back with Xander Horowitz at The Bubba Show. Top Bubba Horowitz, The Bubba Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Xander Horowitz, and of course, the host of The Sporting Edge, as well as newly employed by Edward Jones. And so, Xander, I have an issue, you know, with the younger generation, and even as they get older now, we nobody wants to have face-to-face communication. It's hard to get somebody on the phone. Everybody, you know, people will text you, but they won't necessarily talk to you. What are your thoughts of that?
I'm kind of conflicted on this because I don't think it's our fault. I think that's just kind of the way the technology has been going. And, you know, when you talk about really when iPhones came out and just had such a quick, I mean, obviously cell phones have been around for a very long time, but they haven't really been, you know, mastered like I think the iPhone. And you look at the iPhone today, Android, the sophistication and the quickness of the technology of communicating back and forth without actually having to talk to someone. I think we're just kind of a product of our environment, and I don't like it. You know, I'm not going to say that I don't like texting more than calling, because it's, for me, it's just a little easier. But that's just kind of the way I grew up and the way I was taught. And obviously your generation is completely different. I mean, you guys didn't have cell phones. There was really there was no way to communicate with someone unless you were talking on the home phone or you were talking to them in person. So I think that's where there's a pretty big disconnect between my generation and your generation. But I don't necessarily want to put all the blame on my generation, because, you know, we were given this technology and perfected and mastered it the way we knew how to. And that involved, you know, less face-to-face communication and more I guess, typing back and forth. So it's kind of a catch-22 in that sense.
All right, but what do you think, you know, from in your new career, you know, are you going to be able to text people, or are you going to have to go meet them face-to-face and shake hands?
Absolutely not. You're not.
You know what I'm saying? But, I mean, a lot of businesses run that way. You can't get a hold of anybody. You can't talk to a real person. And I think that frustrates, in the business world, especially frustrates people like me. I mean, I know how to text. I know how to do everything else. But again, when I want to talk to somebody, I don't want to do it electronically. I would rather talk to them. Either I want to compliment them on what a great job they're doing, or I want to tell them that they're doing a crappy job. But I want to be able to get that message across to them face to face. And I think that's one of the issues that, you know, I don't mind the texting. It's great for convenience. But sometimes you really need to talk to people face to face. And I think we've gotten away from that. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, we definitely have gotten away from that. But I think, you know, at everyone's basic core, I think, you know, face-to-face communication is the preferred method. And that's kind of a tough thing for me to explain. But basically, when you talk about financial services, people with their money and, you know, people with their family, I think, are always going to want that face-to-face, you know, whether it's sitting down and making an investment plan for them, or, you know, planning different things, you know, some stuff you would talk about with a lawyer. Having to do with family. I think in that sense, people are always going to want that face-to-face communication with the things that are most important to them. You know, so I guess money and family would be two things that I think are important to a lot of people. So I don't think the face-to-face communication is ever going to go away in those two industries. I could be wrong. You know, in 20 years, we could all be having computerized lawyers and, you know, spit out financial plans. You can put in your data for people, but I think people at their core, with things that are really important like that face to face, and I think it's going to stay that way forever.
And I agree with you there as well. Now, let me ask you this question. You know, there's a lot of this artificial intelligence coming around. You know, we've got Watson, which is the most famous one, but artificial intelligence is starting to take over the world basically in a lot of areas. And you're now seeing, you know, the reduction of a lot of people that used to do those jobs. Are you a fan? Are you getting it, or are you for it?
Oh, this is tough. I'm more for it, I think, but I'm not really for it. I'm very in the middle. I think, you know, technology is like almost like a necessary evil, or the loss of jobs is like a necessary evil of greater technology. You know, you have, you know, basically you think about when Ford first started, you know, you have the line, people go down, they make the cars, you have all these people, and eventually these people were replaced by machines. And now you're seeing that in all kinds of industries, that artificial intelligence is replacing people. And that's the thing I really don't like about it, because it forces, I think it forces people to do things that they really can't do. I mean, not everybody, you know, can grow up to be a programmer or a coder. Not everybody has that intelligence or, you know, the ethic, the work ethic to do that kind of stuff. And that's where I think we really need to look at the mirror. I don't know how far down this is going to affect people, but, you know, back in your time, you know, you could go, it was a long time ago. You know, you could work, you cannot go to college, you could be a construction worker, you could do a multitude of things with your hands, and make a decent living, which you still can now, but those jobs, you know, that, you know, a lot of them are minimum wage jobs too. So I'm not going to say that all these jobs are necessary jobs for the economy. But, you know, a lot of these, the more jobs that get taken away, the more skills that people need to acquire that they might not be equipped to acquire. You know, I think I was fortunate enough to grow up in a pretty good area, went to a very good high school, went to a good college, but not everybody is the same. And not everybody grows up and gets the same education and the same opportunity. So that's where I think it might be a little more hurtful than helpful, because you have a lot of people who don't have anywhere, not even a good, not even a, you know, in the middle. They just don't have opportunity to do things that could make them successful. And the more that you, the more you automate things, the more jobs you take away, I think the more pressure you put on, you know, the population of people who aren't as equipped to acquire these kinds of jobs to get new skills that they might not be able to get.
All right. Well, I have an interesting stat for you. So right now, from my understanding, 20% of the jobs, full-time jobs, are truck drivers. Okay.
Okay.
And we've got, right now, there's a race on to get automated trucks. In other words, so there doesn't have to be a driver. They'll need to be somebody that'll have to monitor, just like on an airplane, because airplanes can obviously fly without a pilot. Right. They can do everything without a pilot, but they need it there in case there's an emergency. So they'll need somebody. But now, instead of a truck driver, you know, being there and he can only go, you know, 10 hours a day because of his shift, these trucks can go 24 hours a day and never stop. What's your thought there? Is that, I know it's obvious, it's coming. The question is it coming too quickly? Is it going to cause a problem? What are the thoughts from the younger generation?
Well, it's interesting, you know, is the monitor, like, could a driver turn into a monitor? That'd be, I guess, be my first question, because then I don't know if it would be as big of a deal. But like you said, 20% of the workforce, that is a ton of people. So I don't know. It's just tough to think about, you know, what is going to happen to a lot of these people who work in these fields that, you know, might be like your age, that, you know, might not know how to do anything else than what they've been doing for the past 30 or 40 years. So it brings been an interesting question. And I got, like you said, eventually it will be here. It's a matter of when. But yeah, my number one thing, if the truck drivers could be the monitors for these vehicles, and I don't think it would be a big deal, but you know, if you talk about that, they're going to need other people and that this is 20% of the force, I think that is a pretty big deal then.
All right. So as we come get ready to go to a close here, do you have any advice for somebody going to college, in college, looking for a job? What would be Xander Horowitz's advice?
My first piece of advice would be to enjoy yourself the first couple years. Do not worry about what you're going to do with the rest of your life. I grew up and, you know, I there was nothing wrong with what I did or what I was taught in the classroom. But, you know, in middle school, they're saying, you know, we're teaching you this for high school. In high school, we're teaching you this for college. In college, we're teaching you this for the real world. And in the real world, we're teaching you this to retire, and then retirement, we're going to get you ready to die now. So I think my best piece of advice would be, when you go to school, enjoy yourself. College is, you know, a place where you can learn about more than just what's going on in the classroom. I mean, you really become more independent. You meet a lot of new people. And I would say, you know, take the time to enjoy that. Don't be someone who is so focused on, you know, getting a 4.0 that you don't have any time for yourself. I mean, I think college is a place, you know, there's so many different things to do that you'd be amazed what you can find if you just kind of let things happen a little bit. You know, obviously, I went to college, I didn't really know anybody. And I think that was the best thing that ever happened to me, because, you know, in those first couple of weeks, you just make friends with people because there's nothing else to do. And yeah, I would say my best piece of advice, you know, enjoy yourself, work hard. Work hard, play hard.
Work hard, play hard. That is the words, according to Xander Horowitz. Xander, thanks for coming on the show today, man. I appreciate it.
Yep, anytime.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station. Don't forget, the Sporting Edge at LibertyTalk.fm, as well as the Bubba Show. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.